Rat Pack, where you at?
Yo, yo, what's up? It's Thursday, August 8th. This is The Rant. I'm Jeff. Got another show for you here today. Actually, today on the podcast, I want to expand a little bit on something I talked about yesterday on the podcast regarding draft strategy. So, you know, the next several podcasts here, I think we really should drill down on strategy because, hey, Saturday is like 1 week away from the second biggest fantasy draft day of the year and 2 weeks away from the biggest. So let's really drill down on all that strategy. Of course, I have listener questions via email, and I know I have at least one voicemail to get to. Oh, the voicemails are so fun. You guys. In the meantime, ftnfantasy.com, promo code FTN15 for 15% off. That goes away on August 15th, so use it before you lose it. I'm always that ding-dong. I miss out on promo codes or coupons because they expire. Don't be like me. I mean, that should be the title of this podcast, not The Rant. It should just be called Don't Be Like Me with Jeff Ratcliffe. Anyway, that and there's still time if you need a draft board at fjfantasy.com. I've talked about this the last several podcasts. You've heard the spiel. You know it's a good product. It's a great product. But you also hopefully know promo code RATCLIFFE, RATCLIFFE, will get you 10% off over there. They ship pretty quickly, but you know we're kind of under the gun. I think this might be the last time I mention it, honestly, because I know you know we're pretty close to fantasy drafts. So use that as well. That promo code doesn't expire. They actually do fantasy baseball stuff too if you do that in like December or, well, you probably won't be drafting in December, but like March. Anyway, that promo code stays. All right, so real quick before I get into this draft stuff, no news about Brandon Ayuk. And I don't think that's a surprise. I really don't think he goes anywhere. I've been saying this over and over and over again. But we did at least hear, I mean, I say no news, but there was at least one report from Diana Rossini saying that the Steelers are still in play, but there's no deal imminent. You know, you would have thought yesterday that this thing was happening, like yesterday morning, that this thing was happening immediately, and that's not the case. She said no deal is done. They are still in talks, but apparently the Steelers' trade offer was not the highest, and their financial offer to Ayuk was not the highest, so I just don't know how this is going to happen. I'm taking the discount left and right on Brandon Ayuk in best ball right now, and honestly, if this thing lingers straight on through fantasy drafts the next couple weeks, I'm taking the discount on Brandon Ayuk. Hey, that could backfire. I've had a couple things backfire on me in the past, but this isn't a Le'Veon Bell jet ski, I'm not going to sign my franchise tag situation. I do think that he's going to play one way or the other, and I really think they're going to get the extension done. I mean, this just reeks of Nick Bosa last year. It really does. So that's the latest on that front. Otherwise, you know, if anything does happen, like I said, I'll try and do my best to do an emergency podcast, although I am traveling tomorrow to the Fantasy Football Expo in Canton for the whole weekend. So that might be a little tricky. Of course, knowing my luck, as soon as I take off, something's going to happen there. If it is Brandon Ayuk stays with the 49ers, then I don't think that's worth an extra podcast. But if this dude gets traded, yes, it is worth an extra podcast. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Keep your ears peeled for that. So yesterday I was talking about how what we do in round one can impact what we do going forward, round two, round three, right? And I mentioned this whole idea of if you are going to get an anchor running back, I only want to get one of those guys. Now, the reason I do that, it really has its roots way back in the day. And I'll tell you a little story. Gather around. I'll tell you a little story. For a long time, I sucked at fantasy football. I still suck at times, and I'm trying to get better at this game, right? Always trying to get better. But I sucked. Like, I was good enough to make the playoffs every year in my home league. This is back in, like, the aughts. So, like, say, like, 2005, 6, 7, whatever. I would make the playoffs. And I actually would make the playoffs every year. With, I think there was 1 year in the aughts that I didn't make the playoffs. So 9 out of 10 years, not bad. You know how many times I won the league? Zero. Now, I eventually started winning other leagues, but in that league, could not win the thing. And I was wondering all along why. Now, I did the thing a lot of fantasy folks do. I externalized, I blamed the players, I woe is me, blamed luck, all of these different things. But after a while, I kind of thought maybe it's time to actually look at what I'm doing. And what I was doing was what everybody did back then, running back early and often, robust running back. And this was an era, too, where LaDainian Tomlinson, Priest Holmes, Larry Johnson, Sean Alexander, like all these guys with 300 plus carries, you know, massive, massive workloads, 20 plus rushing touchdowns. Like this was a regular thing in that era. It's not now. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, he led running backs in touches with 339 last year. Not carries, touches. So I did that thing. And what I ended up realizing is I would get into the postseason with that type of roster, and I would always justify it with the logic that there's so much depth at wide receiver. And I would just get overpowered because invariably at least one of those running backs goes down with injury. It happens. Running backs touch the ball a lot, therefore they're open to getting hurt more. It's hard to get through a whole season in the NFL, especially when you play running back. So I wouldn't have the firepower to compete with the teams who had better wide receivers than me. And my running backs, if they got hurt, you know, I was screwed. Like, even if I handcuffed, you're facing a downgrade, or if you don't have the cuff, like if it's like some kind of weird situation, you're relying on guys like Nick Goings. And like old school fantasy people will remember the brief moment in time we all had to use Nick Goings. But if you don't, just look it up. Like, if you're a younger listener, look up Nick Goings and you'll see how awesome that was. So my teams would fall flat. You know, I'd be a team that would get out the gate hot. I'd be a September and October team, man. 7-1, baby, or something like that. You know, I would get out the gate hot. Then I'd sort of come back to the pack, and then they would blow by me in December. I was building a fragile roster. I was building a roster that was not set up for long-term success. And boy, I felt great in October. I really did. But I felt like crap in December. I would, you know, at the end of the season, I'd be crying myself out of the league, safely finishing third or fourth. Occasionally, I'd make it to the championship game and just get destroyed. The roster build was the problem. It wasn't luck. It wasn't the players. It was me and how I was building rosters. And it was around that time. This is before the era of zero RB. Zero RB is not a new draft concept. It's a new name, and it's a great name. But it's an old school idea that actually has its roots in fantasy baseball. But the idea itself, I originally heard about it referred to in fantasy football. And this was probably around 2009, 2008. I heard it called upside down drafting. So it was even before I was in the fantasy industry. It was called upside down drafting. And the idea was it was a sort of zig when everybody else zags type of an approach. If everybody's going RB heavy, then there's an advantage in not going RB heavy and loading up at the other positions. Now, primarily that's wide receiver, though some historically upside down drafters or now zero RB drafters do grab elite tight end or high end quarterback. I don't do that approach, but again, I'm never saying that my approach is right. I'm just saying it's what worked for me. So I flipped it upside down, and I'll tell you, it was a running gag in my one home league to the point where I got married in 2011, and one of the best man speech, right? The guy's in my league, and he's been in this home league of mine. We call it the farm league now, but he's been in this league since it started, right? And he talked about how I could not win a fantasy football league. That was the best man speech, largely. Oh, and it killed. Oh, everybody loved it. And fortunately, that was 2011. It was September of 2011. I won the league that year because I had already started to pivot away from the running back early and often approach that really was fragile, built a robust lineup for September and October, but not a robust lineup for the long haul. And honestly, I don't care my record. Obviously, I won a few wins in September and October, but I don't care. I don't have to be 7-1. I'm not going to flex on a league with that. I don't care about that. I care about making it to the dance and having the firepower to beat up on my league in the postseason. Like, that's what it's all about for me. You know, that's what I want to do. So I switched it up and I won the league in 2011. I have won since then, and I've never looked back. I've never once said, you know, I really should go robust running back. So that's sort of the genesis of the draft strategies. And I do say strategies because I don't just use one strategy. There are several different strategies that I have up my sleeve, and I will deploy them based on what happens during the draft. But it's also, you know, it creates this sort of dynamic approach. Like, a lot of people will come into a fantasy draft and they'll look at their rankings or whatever sheet they're using, and they view it in a very static sense. Like, whatever it is before the draft is what it is during the draft, and that's that. In other words, the rankings don't change, nothing moves, the board is static. Well, that's not really true. Your board can move around, and I'll give you a couple examples, but really where I arrived at this idea was from doing auction drafts. When your opponents spend money in an auction draft, that will impact you. If they overpay for a particular player, then you can actually get better values at other players. So hypothetically speaking, the market values for those players actually go down during the course of the draft, or vice versa. If somebody gets a crazy value or several crazy values, then all of a sudden the market values may go up, right? It changes based on what happened. So here's a very easy example. Let's say that you do get the first overall pick and you decide you're not worried about Christian McCaffrey missing the preseason. I'm not, for the record. I said this yesterday. You're not worried about him missing the preseason, so you draft Christian McCaffrey. Immediately, the first move for me is I look to my board and I find Elijah Mitchell. Now, currently I have Elijah Mitchell with a round 15 grade on my 2.0 board. I'm going to move him up 2 to 3 rounds. So he comes up to like 12 or 13. I'd probably move him to 13. You could be extra safe. You could move him up 3 rounds, but I just moved him up 2 rounds. So in other words, Elijah Mitchell's value just changed based on what I did. Now, let's be clear. Tyler Algier's value does not change. Bijan Robinson's handcuff. Braylon Allen's value does not change. You know, Breece Hall's handcuff. No, only Elijah Mitchell, because I chose Christian McCaffrey. So his value has just changed. What was true before the draft is no longer true based on what I did. Now, here's the other key thing, and this is the hardest thing for a lot of people to wrap their heads around, but if you are using a hero RB strategy, I used to call it pun RB too. I'll just go with hero RB. It rhymes with zero RB. So there you go, whatever. So I'm in a hero RB approach. In order to effectively execute a hero RB approach, you can't draft running backs in round 3, 4, or 5, whatever. And that's a no matter what, if you truly want to execute the strategy. And this is where people go wrong every year when they try and do this. So they'll look down, say it's round 4, and somebody like Kenneth Walker is the highest on their board, like higher than any wide receivers left. They'll say, would you really pass on him? And here's where we forgot a key step. We forgot to adjust our board based on what we did. So if I drafted McCaffrey in round 1, there's pretty much no way that Kenneth Walker can be the highest on my board because, yes, on the initial 2.0, he comes in at a round 3 grade. I don't want to draft him there. You know, if I drafted Christian McCaffrey, I'm not taking a running back in round 3. So technically, Kenneth Walker has a round 7 grade with me. And here, like, I'll go Kenneth Walker down, and I'll tell you all these guys would move into the 7th. Ready? Kenneth Walker, Joe Mixon, Devon Achane, James Cook, Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara, David Montgomery, Ramondre Stevenson, DeAndre Swift, Najee Harris, James Conner, Tony Pollard, Raheem Mostert, and Zamir White. All of them move to round 7. Now, I already have guys in round 7. Obviously, they stay. Like Jaylen Warren, he's in round 7. He stays in round 7. But the rest of them have a round 7 grade. I dynamically moved them during the course of the draft. That way, there's no temptation. That way, Kenneth Walker is not highest on my board. It's a wide receiver, very, very likely here, who is highest on my board. There's no temptation. That way, I can execute the strategy. Now, for me, I don't even have to physically do it. I don't have the temptation. I know for a lot of people who are new to a hero RB approach, they may have that temptation. If that applies to you, keep that in mind. Like, no, this guy has to be here in the 7th. Is Kenneth Walker going to be there in the 7th? Hell no. You know that. I know that. My 94-year-old grandmom knows that. No, of course not. But could David Montgomery? Yes. Or Ramondre? Yes. Or DeAndre? Yes. Or Najee? Yes. Like, those guys could be there. So you still are following the ordering. You just have to wait until round 7. So your draft board dynamically changes during the course of your draft. And I'm telling you this right now, your opponents aren't doing that. They're just drafting straight on down the list. And you're going to build a much more robust roster that can compete in the postseason, ideally, with the loaded up group of wide receivers. So I wanted to expand on that. I know it's a different concept for a lot of people because it's not what you're taught. And honestly, this is just something I arrived on trial and error. You know, a lot of what I do is, you know, basically I've effed up so many times in fantasy, and then I've kind of found ways where I don't F up anymore. And that's really what this is all about. So hopefully you find that helpful. Let me get over to some of these emails. Let's start with Adam. He has a keeper question. He said his keeper decision is on the 15th. So is mine. I technically speaking, it has to be like midnight on the 15th is when I have a keeper decision as well. So we're about a week out from that. He said it's a 10-team, two-quarterback league. Doesn't love any of his options. He's picking at 1-3, and he could keep Hill, but he could also pick Hill at 1-3. So he said essentially here his options are Saquon in the second round, Cook in the sixth, Rashad White in the fifth. I mean, Saquon does give you a little bit of value. I mean, I'm at 11 overall. If you're picking at 1-3, that's 22 overall, so you get some good value on him. James Cook is a fourth round value. Two rounds there, It's all right. Rashad White, I obviously have Rashad White as a second round value, so that's pretty good. So I would pretty much toss James Cook. I mean, if it was me, I'm probably keeping Saquon and just calling it a day. I don't care about keeping a guy that early. A lot of people will shy away from it. But remember, and I keep saying this across the radio show and here, keepers are draft picks you make before the draft. That's all they really are. And so here you're taking, you know, if it was a redraft and I said, hey, you could get Saquon Barkley at 22, would you do it? Because I would. And then that crosses out, like, I know I'm going hero RB because I got my anchor running back, and now I'm off to the races. Like, I already know, I checked that box, and now I know the rest of the direction to go straight on through to round 7, and then really straight on through from there. So that is, that's how I'd approach it. But again, it ultimately comes down to you. Like, you guys got to be the ones to make that final decision. I know you've been trained by the fantasy industry to ask a fantasy question, get a fantasy answer. And then usually what happens after that is the fantasy answer invariably ends up being wrong. So then you blame the fantasy analyst. I'm not about that. Like, I'm more about how do we get to the answers? You know, I used to be what I remember back in like 07, 06, 07 was when I really started to follow Matthew Berry. And I'm like, how does he get to the answers? You know, like, what's the process? So that's usually what my goal is, to help shine a light on the process a little bit. Jordan checking in, QB roster construction. Standard rules, it is a 12-team auction league, only 4 bench spots. I hate that. I hate the short bench league. That's an old man, angry fantasy guy type thing. Their argument always is, oh, it keeps waivers active. But the reality is it just enhances luck because you can't use the skill of, you know, rostering players on your bench, getting out ahead of your opponents, that sort of thing. Would I only roster one quarterback? If so, would I target someone with maybe a little higher floor, lower ceiling? I would only roster one quarterback, Jordan, that's for sure. But I don't necessarily care about the floor or ceiling. I'd probably actually just swing for the fences. So here'd be a spot where like a Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams would be fun. And then the cool thing here is, since you only have 4 bench spots, I know if I swing and miss on those guys, there are going to be quarterbacks on waivers in this league. So that's how I'd approach it. He said he's been following since 2016 at PFF. That was when I like got the big gig at PFF. And apparently I've helped him win some championships. Oh, he purchased a VIP package at FTN. Nice, Jordan. I appreciate that. Yeah, I just saw, by the way, over at PFF, I just saw that Sam Monson and Steve Palazzolo are leaving. That's like pretty much the last of like my PFF, which is really weird to think. Now, I left in 2020, but guys like Eric Eager, Mike Renner, of course, we know like Ian and Dwayne, who came in right after I left, they're already gone from the fantasy team.
you know, Austin Gale. Like, it's just crazy. It's a totally different PFF than when I was there. Even Neil Hornsby, like the founder, he's not even there. It's nuts. But I'm excited to see what they do. They're going to the 33rd team. Shout out to my guys, Sam and Steve. They're great stuff. Like, they're football. They're not fantasy, but man, you learn a lot from them. They know their stuff. All right, Maurice. Title of the email is Justin Fields. Question, what are you doing with Fields specifically in Superflex? Probably the highest ceiling, lowest floor at quarterback. Well, it's definitely a low floor. I wouldn't say highest ceiling, but his ceiling is pretty high. Like, you can't compare his ceiling to the elite guys. I'm avoiding him. You know, Mike Tomlin even came out yesterday and told the media, like, Russell Wilson is still the number one quarterback. Like he said, the depth chart that they released is accurate. So Russell Wilson is still the number one. Does that mean Russell Wilson will be number one at the start of the season? I don't know. I'm not going to say that. I'm not that dumb. But there's so much uncertainty here that I feel like it could go sideways. Like, you could invest in Justin Fields and then he's just the backup. So I did plant the flag on this show a couple shows back in terms of best ball. Like, I have plenty of Russell Wilson in best ball. I have no Justin Fields, really. And right now, since there still is some uncertainty, what I've been doing is shying away from that. Fortunately, I haven't gotten Pickens, but not necessarily fortunately. I like Pickens a lot, but I haven't gotten him recently, so I haven't had to make that decision. But yeah, I'm pumping the brakes right now. Pumping the brakes. Things change quickly, you know? Jarrett saying dead zone strategy. He said, in the first couple rounds, wideouts at the top of his board are at the top of his board, and then he goes to the zero RB path waiting until round seven. Getting someone like Deontay Johnson still on the board in that range. He said, in a zero RB build, once that seventh round hits, am I looking strictly at running backs for the next four-ish picks, or would I capitalize and chance even more wide receiver firepower? It's a good question. I really make that hard pivot to running back in that range, because I have found 7, 8, 9, 10 has been the range where you're most likely to hit. Once you get outside of that range, it's really hard. And I did this article at ftnfantasy.com yesterday, so it's running backs to draft if you go wide receiver early. So it's basically hero zero RB targets. And I'm telling you, man, I look back at last year's, and there were a lot of names on there that hit. Like, I'm not talking elite, 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 but if you can get RB2 or better out of those guys, or like top 24 production, that's great. So for me, yeah, I shift gears, and I'm not really worried that Deontay Johnson is still on the board in that range. You know, unfortunately that happens, but you got a lot better than Deontay Johnson at that point on your roster, so I'm not overly concerned. It looks like he is in the Carolina area, though, so that that could be part of it. I don't know if he'll be on the board at that point. Keith, rankings and anchor positions. He said, which rankings or cheat sheet would denote the anchor RBs? Well, there's, yes, wide receivers and tight ends. There's no such thing as an anchor wide receiver or a tight end. It's only anchor RB is a type of, you know, it's a running back who goes into early rounds who you want to anchor your team to, right? That's really the point. He said, I know you said RB dead zone is a period in the draft, which you either draft an anchor. Oh no, I don't draft an anchor running back in the dead zone. It starts after I draft an anchor or after all the anchors are gone. So he's asking what cheat sheet. So, I mean, technically speaking, the tiers is the cheat sheet that shows them. So, but you could also just say it's the top 12 running backs this year, which you can, you know, count those guys off. The lowest graded guy out of that group has a early third round grade. It's Josh Jacobs. Otherwise, that's it for the anchor guys. So you could use that. You could use any of the cheat sheets, just knowing that anchors stop after RB12. Another one, running back keeper, dead zone keeper. Oh, there we go, from Scott. He said his question is about Zamir White, can keep him in his 16th round. Well, okay, so here's where the confusion. He said even though he falls into the running back dead zone, well, I don't know if he does. We won't know until your draft starts, but if you're keeping him, guess what? He didn't fall in the RB dead zone. The RB dead zone is a period in the draft. And yeah, it starts in one of two places. Like, if I took Christian McCaffrey one overall, I'm in the dead zone and I'm there until round seven. if I didn't take any running backs early, like say I just go wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, and then let's say Jacobs is the last of the anchors drafted, we're in the running back dead zone as well. It's a period during the draft. So keeping Zamir White in round 16, and I have Zamir White, as I mentioned earlier, I have a sixth round grade on him, late sixth. I mean, that's good. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's some volatility with Zamir White, of course, because we don't know what to expect. And we have seen some of these guys like late season wonders who end up not performing well the next year. Thomas Rawls, James Starks, guys like that. But I still don't mind that spot as a keeper. Adam, running backs to target. He says he listened to the segment. I guess he's talking about the radio show. I try not to cross these streams as much because there are a lot of people who don't listen to the radio show who listen to this podcast. And, you know, if you're listening to both, you know, they're a little different. But he said, I agree with your point of not drafting two running backs from the same backfield. But in situations where there is likely an eventual preferred option, does it make sense to draft two? No, this is across the board. He's saying Jonathan Brooks and Chuba Hubbard. I'm not drafting Chuba Hubbard, first and foremost. I'll start somebody else in the beginning of the season. And if I'm wrong on this one, so be it. He said last year grabbed Achan and Mostert. That probably was a frustrating thing for you. So no, I would not be doing that. I do not want two players in the same backfield. It leads to more frustration than is necessary. And ultimately in fantasy football, my goal is to not have decisions to make. The fewer decisions to make that I have, the fewer wrong decisions I'm going to make ultimately, because I know I'm not going to be perfect. And you probably, hopefully you know that about yourself as well. Scott said auction help. Two questions here. He's got a super flex auction. It's live. He said, if the league spends heavily on quarterbacks, would you adjust allocation slightly? I mean, maybe I'd move it down. You know, I'm going in the opposite direction. I'm going to be fearful if they're greedy. If they spend more on quarterbacks, that means I can get value quarterbacks after they stop spending on quarterbacks. Have I done a live auction draft before? Yes, I have, is his other question. In fact, I'm doing one in 2 days. It'll be my annual one in Canton. He said, what are some things you should be avoiding, some things you should be doing? Number one thing you have to do in a live draft, live auction draft, is pay attention. And it's really hard, you know, because they take forever. Pay attention. Just pay attention to what's going on. Don't get caught up in back and forth bidding. Make sure you spend all your money. You know, but live is definitely, paying attention is the number one thing. All right. French Revolution from Spencer. He said, do I have any tips or tricks for guillotine leagues? Just be safe. That's it. I'm not taking anybody who's banged up. You know, DeAndre Hopkins, not drafting him, because I really want to get through the first couple weeks of a guillotine. That's the first battle. So very safe, you know, high floor guys to start things out, and then you take it from there. That's probably the number one thing in guillotine. All right, let me do this voicemail.
Hey, Jeff, Mike from Tennessee. Had a keeper question for you. I don't find out my draft position until a couple days before our draft, so I can't really use the trade value chart to a T. But I can keep two of these guys, Tyreek Hill in the second, Devon Achane in the ninth, Sam Laporta in the 13th, and those are all my options. I can keep two. Thank you, sir. I'm glad to have Durant back. Have a good day.
I think he means the keeper value chart. Trade value chart is a rookie draft thing that's in the Rookie Fantasy Scouting Guide every year. FTNFantasy.com. FTN15 for 15% off. But the keeper value chart, which you also have access to with a subscription, you can use it. Just assume that you have the seventh pick in the round. Just safe assumption there. If you don't, well, oh well, you rolled the dice and you were wrong. But that's what I always assume. Tyreek Hill is fine in the second round, and really at any point in the second round. So that one would be pretty easy for me. And again, I'm going to keep the highest ranked guys. Now, Laporta, I don't love keeping tight ends, but you have a guy who has a third round grade in the 13th. And, you know, that's a little bit of a better deal than Devon Achane. Plus, you're avoiding that negative correlation with having two Dolphins. So I think that one's a fairly straightforward one, but you can actually use a keeper value chart. Even if you don't know your spot, all you have to do is just assume you're the middle. So I always go to the seventh pick in the first round. So there you go. That is that. Or you could just assume the seventh pick in every round. Easier that way. 215-720-1708. One quick request for people. I know you love talking to me, but like 2 minute long voicemails are really, I'm going to have to edit those down. So try and keep it brief. Like he just went 41 seconds. That was perfect. Mike from Tennessee, hooking it up right there. So if you do call in, just keep it a little bit shorter. The email, of course, is therantpodjr@gmail.com. Remember, you can follow along with me on Twitter @JeffRatcliffe. Same thing on Instagram @JeffRatcliffe. I'll be posting some stuff, I think, this weekend from Canton. Pretty big event there, Fantasy Football Expo. If you happen to be there, stop by, say what's up. I'm like a total jerk in person, so I'll be real standoffish, not friendly whatsoever. Yeah, but say what's up. Maybe we'll have a beer together or something. Then we'll be back next week. I got more travel next week, so next week's going to be a weird schedule as well, but we'll deal with it. You know, we get by one day at a time. FTNFantasy.com. FTN15. Use that before it goes away. 7 days left there. Preseason, I'll recap some preseason action on Monday's podcast because we're going to have a lot of intel there. So we'll get some preseason intel for you coming on Monday. All right. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the preseason football. I'll catch you on the flip side. I'm Jeff, and I'm out.